It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to what should be a fascinating hour of true history, with programs mostly off of the grid from radio's past. Later on, we'll hear an episode of The Tenth Man, then The Passing Parade with John Nesbitt, but right now it's Hello Sucker, this broadcast out of WMAQ in Chicago in the early 1950s, in conjunction with the Chicago Better Business Bureau. This episode profiling photography scams and the story Portrait of a Sucker from February 9th, 1952.
But those pictures were no good, I tell you. I paid $26 for them. $26! And they don't even look like me. Hello? Hello?
Hello, sucker.
Station WMAQ presents Hello Sucker in cooperation with the Better Business Bureau of Chicago to help you recognize some of the schemes and rackets now making the rounds in Chicago. Business people are honest and fair with the public, almost 100%. But there is a small minority which preys on the unsuspecting public through petty schemes and rackets. And although these rackets are continually exposed and their perpetrators prosecuted, many continue year after year with new ones being concocted and old ones revived with a new slant. Don't let the expression, "Hello, sucker," refer to you. Protect yourself. Listen to Chapter 6, Portrait of a Sucker, on Hello, Sucker.
My name's Ralph Sellers. I run a neighborhood restaurant, a nice, respectable place, you understand. No rough stuff, any funny business. Not in my place. I'd like to have my friends drop in when they feel like it, for a sociable evening. And what I could tell you about the little chiseling photography rackets in this town. Boy, I got a liberal education in that line, and I'm telling you, owing to an experience I had that I'd just soon forget. It started off like this. You see, I got a nice hall in the back of my building that I often rent out to customers for wedding parties and such. And last year, I decided to go all out and throw an honest-to-goodness, real McCoy, fancy costume party myself. And the night it came off, I stood at the door of my place greeting the customers as they came in. Sure, a lot of elegant folks walking through the doors of a little old Blue Moon restaurant tonight.
Yeah, and I'll bet all the wives are getting just as big a kick out of dressing up fancy as that is. I gotta hand it to you, Ralph.
Hey, here, I'll take it.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, I just know this party's gonna be one we're gonna remember, Mr. Sellers.
I sure hope so, Mrs. Botine. Now, let's see. You're at table number...
We're sharing a table without a Clance and his missus.
Oh, sure. Table number 14. The Clances aren't here yet, though. But come right along with me, folks. Right through the dining room into the ballroom.
Oh, listen to him, in the ballroom yet. Blue Moon Hall, a ballroom.
Oh, I think it's nice. Is Mrs. Sellers here yet?
Pretty soon. She's coming with her sister and her brother-in-law.
All right. Yeah. I came in from the country for this.
Yeah.
You really did some promoting, Ralph.
Well, here's table number 14, folks. Now, which way would you rather face, Mrs. Botine?
Looks like you got your choice.
This one, please.
All right.
Oh, my. Is that a flashbulb? Oh, Mr. Sellers, you got a photographer here and everything.
Hey, just like those swanky nightclubs, Ralph.
You think of everything. Well, I want all my friends to have a good time at the Blue Moon tonight. Of course, these pictures won't have those fancy nightclub price tags on them.
How much?
Well, this photographer fellow came around and offered them for 35 cents a print.
Hey, not bad.
Oh, Ed, wouldn't it be nice to have a picture of us in our costumes for our album? And maybe Mother'd like to have one, too.
Well, that's kind of what I thought, Miss Botine. Maybe my friends would like some little mementos of the party tonight. So they can remember how they looked that night when they got themselves up so elegant.
Well, don't you think we ought to wait till the Clances get here, Edna?
Well,
Ed, you do whatever you like about that, folks. Now, whenever you want a photographer, just have him come on over to the table.
Well, is he going
to
develop those pictures right here tonight?
No. He's just shooting them tonight. Have him shoot as many as you want. See, he's going to bring all the proofs into me in a week or two, and then I'll take your order after you've seen the proof.
Hmm. Oh, now, isn't that nice, Ed? We only have to take the ones we want.
That's right, Miss Botine. You pay me for however many pictures you want, and then I just send your order to the photographer, see?
Yeah, that's your service, Ralph.
Oh, thanks, Ed.
Well, you folks enjoy yourselves now. I'll send a waiter right over for your order, and if you'll excuse me, I'll get back to the door. My wife ought to be getting here any minute now. And when I got back into the hall, sure enough, there's Sue already waiting for me.
Oh, there you are, Ralph. Elva and Clem and I were just wondering what happened to you.
Well, I've seen some customers at their table and telling them about the photographer. Oh, hello, Elva and Clem.
Hello, Ralph.
You mean you've got one of those candid photographers here tonight, Ralph?
Oh, he isn't a candid cameraman,
well,
Clem.
Well, I sure hope he don't suck nobody in like I got sucked in last time I came to Chicago. He could ruin a good party.
Oh, Clem, you never going to get over that 50 cents.
I don't care if it was only 50 cents. It's the principle of the thing, Elvie. We came into the city one time last summer to a ball game.
Well, Clem, you never told us you were here.
It was when the White Sox were in the middle of that winning streak.
Oh, yeah.
Had some neighbors with us, and we were making kind of an occasion of it. Well, one of those candid cameramen snapped a picture of us as we were going into the ballpark.
Well, I didn't know there were any more of those guys around.
There sure were at the ballpark that day. And before I hardly realized he took our picture, up he stepped and asked me a little envelope with some printing on it. The printing says, "Send it to the studio with 50 cents inside, and they'll mail us the picture they snapped."
Oh, you mean you really sent it in? Oh, Clem. I thought everybody knew what a jip those street photographers
are. Oh, we just sent it in for a kind of a gag. You know, curiosity. I wouldn't have minded so much if we'd never heard from them again, but what do you think we get back in the mail?
Some terrible pictures, probably.
Pictures, my eye. A little printed card that says the pictures didn't turn out well. And this card is a credit card.
A credit card?
It says, "And when you see one of our photographers on the street, just hand him this card. He will be glad to snap your picture free of charge."
Oh, boy, that's a new one, Clem.
Maybe so. Yeah. What I want to know is, do I have to come 100 miles to Chicago from where I live, travel up and down the streets to find one of those cameramen and get my 50 cents worth of picture? Right.
Oh, Clem, I've heard enough about that silly sidewalk,
man. Why don't we go on into party, Ralph? Elvin, Clem drove a long way for this. It's an occasion.
Credit card.
Sure. I'll take you in, but I have to come back and watch the door for a while. A few people aren't here yet, but come on.
I've been jipped just one time too many on those chiseling little picture rackets.
Clem, not now. We come to Chicago to enjoy ourselves at this party.
All right, Elvie. Well, just you wait till this party's over. I'm going to give Sue and Ralph an earful.
Well, luckily, the sour note from my brother-in-law, Clem, didn't ruin the party that night. As far as Sue and I could tell, everybody had a wonderful time, wives and all. Well, was I pleased to have that photographer on hand. You know, 75 customers, all dressed up, fit to kill, could keep a camera clicking and flash bulbs popping for the better part of an evening. It was real late, time we all got home to my front door. That photographer taking pictures was sure a swell idea, Sue. You know, he must have taken pictures of everybody there.
All I gotta say is I hope you don't get gypped on the whole deal.
Oh, now, Clem, let's not get started on that again. Come on to bed.
No, sir. I've been keeping my mouth shut all evening about this, and I told Ralph I was going to give him an earful.
Yeah, but how could I get gypped, Clem? I only collect the money for the pictures and pay the cameraman with it.
Now, look here, Ralph. What I want to know about, if that photographer wants to gyp you, he'll figure out some way.
Clem, you just got it in for all photographers. Just because one little sidewalk operator took you for 50 cents.
Oh, no. Now, Elvie and I got took on a lot fancier deal than that.
Oh, all right, Clem. You might as well tell them. It was plenty fancy, all right.
Well, this here deal was an air view to the farm.
Oh?
A slick-talking guy, one of those city guys, comes around to see us one day, and he gives us a big sale.
Last few days, we've been flying over this neighborhood, Mr. Allen. We couldn't help noticing what an outstanding, well-kept farm yours is.
Oh, I don't know. Elvie and I keep ourselves pretty busy with it, of course.
Well, your effort certainly shows, Mr. Allen, from the air especially. Now, I'd like to interest you and Mrs. Allen in some aerial photos of this beautiful place.
Pictures from the air? What in the world for?
Well, I was just coming to that, Mrs. Allen. Newest thing, you know. Shows what progressive people you are. Now, a large color picture of your farm would be mighty nice to have on view in your living room. I'll show you one. Here. Now, see this nice gold frame and the beautiful shadings of color in that picture?
Well, say, that is pretty, but
what size is that?
Well, this is the 11 by 14 size and a real buy.
How much?
Oh, a real buy at only $60. Just the thing to show in your living room.
$60?
Show that off in the living room? The whole county would think we were crazy.
I always suggest that just to try folks out. I should have known better. I didn't really think you'd be interested in one of these. You aren't the kind of folks that go in for show.
Well, I should say not.
No, I could tell just looking around that you're practical, solid citizens who wouldn't go for something like that. However, I do have some other items for practical, solid people like yourself. Now, for instance, some nice Christmas cards showing a picture of your farm in color. Now, here. You see? Like these. Now, take a look at these, Mrs. Allen.
Mm. Mm. They are kind of pretty. Look, Clem. Aren't they, Clem?
Yeah, they're good looking. How'd we know our place would look like that, though?
Oh, I forgot. I have something to show you. While our photographer was up the other day, he took the liberty of making a sample photo of your place.
Of our place? From the air?
Uh-huh. Now, just to give you an idea, of course. Now, here. Here it is.
Well, look, Clem. It's the pig pen.
Darned if it isn't. Hey, what do you know? The pig pen. Say.
Of course, that'll only give you a rough idea. Very rough.
Well, I can't see sending out Christmas cards with a picture of our pig pen. Anyway, that's not in color.
Well, no, but of course we'd get a better view than that, Mr. Allen, naturally.
No, I don't think so, mister.
Well, then, have you ever thought about having an air photo of your farm on your letterhead? Now, a nice letterhead in color, of course. Here, let me show you a sample here. There. See? Now, isn't that attractive, Mrs. Allen?
Mmm, real pretty. You like it, Clem?
It is kind of neat at that.
Now, suppose you had pictures of your own farm up there at the top. We'd make another shot, of course, and dress it up with some ornamental printing. The name of your place. I say, that'd finish it off nicely. Stationery like this, you know, makes a good impression on the people you have correspondence with. Shows how up-to-date you are.
You mean this place of ours would show up like this? Huh. Print it up on paper?
Maybe even better than this, Mr. Allen. You have quite a lot of correspondence, I imagine. Most people in the farming business do. Now, if you'd like to give them an order for some color photos, I'll make you a very good price. We'll have them delivered in 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, Clem, color pictures of the farm on letterhead sound all right to me. Gotta let people know you're in business, you know. I think that'd make up into real handsome stationery.
Who said it wouldn't? That's not what got my goat. We paid the guy a deposit, $17.50, half of what the pictures were supposed to cost. He left that black and white sample. Said he'd be back.
And?
We've never seen hide nor hair of him since. All we got for our $17.50 is a measly old air view of our pig pen.
All right, so maybe $17.50 isn't a fortune. I guess Elvie and I aren't going broke on account of that. It's just that it makes you so doggone mad playing sucker for one of those slickers.
You know, it never even occurred to me that I might be in training to be a sucker myself. About a week after the party, the photographer fella brought a real nice batch of proofs around the Blue Moon where my customers could look at them and leave the money for their orders with me. And in time, the word got around, everybody got through on and on over the samples. I must have sent in an order for around 200 pictures. I know I collected close to 70 of my customers' bucks for those pictures, and the photographer took $50 when he collected the order. Well, then the monkey business started. After more than a month, my customers were wondering out loud when the pictures were going to be delivered. And one morning, while I was washing and polishing up, in come Mrs. Otto Clance.
Mr. Sellers.
Oh, morning, Mrs. Clance.
Any word about the pictures yet, Mr. Sellers?
You know, I was just thinking I'd better check with that studio today.
Don't you think it's about time we were getting those pictures?
Well, it was a kind of a big order, Mrs. Clance.
I'll just wait here, Mr. Sellers, while you go and call that studio and find out what's the matter.
Hmm? Oh, yes. Well, that's a good idea. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
We have 6 pictures coming to us.
Well, the studio put me off. Same way they've been doing for 2 or 3 weeks. They were awful rushed, they said. It's going to be another couple of weeks. So I hung up. Sat there a minute. Hating to have to go back and tell that to Mrs. Clance. Then the minute I started, I could tell it was going to be more than just Mrs. Clance.
And I got
got to thinking the other day that it's almost like the time I got taken in on that wedding album racket when Ed and I got married.
Well, I got ring too, and she took as a baby.
Oh, yeah?
Look out, here he comes.
But I heard him. Well, I stopped and got a couple of cups of coffee for him. Took it on to the end of the counter where they were sitting. Huh. Morning, Mrs. Poteen. You ladies join me in some coffee on the house?
To make up for some more of that studio's delay,
I came to find out about our pictures, Mr. Sellers.
What, the studio just told me it's going to be another couple of weeks. So I'm sure sorry. I couldn't help hearing you as I was coming out of the phone booth. Something about pictures of the baby, you said, Mrs. Clance?
Well, we were just comparing notes about some other trouble we had about pictures.
I hear you say you got rimmed, Mrs. Clance?
We both did, Mr. Sellers. In different deals.
Oh, how was that, Mrs. Boutin?
Well, mine was on a wedding album when Ed and I got married last year.
And I, when one of those door-to-door men called on me and told me he was keeping, told me on keeping a photographic record of the baby's development. That's what he called it.
Oh, say, now that's a shame. How'd they go about selling you on the idea, anyway?
Mr. Sellers, when it's a picture of some big occasion in your life, you don't need much of a sales talk. You just naturally want to have pictures of your wedding and your baby.
Well, about this wedding album of yours.
Oh, that photographer showed me the nicest album. Pictures in it were so pretty.
Yeah, I've seen those albums. They are nice.
Yeah, if you ever get it, it's nice. Oh, that photographer told me he'd make up one just like that for me. We were supposed to get 21 pictures and one enlargement for $45. The album to put him in was another 15.
Ooh, that's not exactly cheap, Mrs. Boutine.
Well, it's worth that much to have pictures of your wedding, Mr. Sellers. I mean, well, it's worth it if you ever get the pictures.
But didn't you ever see any?
Oh, I saw some proofs, and we picked out our 21 pictures. We paid him about $35 in advance. Huh. He wanted the rest of the money, too, but I told him he'd get that when I got my pictures. And do you know I've never been able to get them? To this day.
And he still got your money?
Every penny I paid him.
But can't you do anything about it, Mrs. Boutine?
Well, how can I? He isn't in the phone book. Doesn't have a studio anymore. I was just a sucker, I guess. That's all.
Well, at least I did get my free picture of the baby.
Yeah, you did better than I did.
Free, huh? $30 worth of free.
A salesman called you, you said, Miss Clance?
Knocked on my door one day and handed me a card. It was worth $1, he said. Entitled me to a free 8x10 picture of the baby. The photographer would come right to your home. You wouldn't have to bother getting the baby ready for a studio appointment.
That's all right.
Yeah, that part of it's fine. The baby always gets so upset if you're taken into strange surroundings. Well, I agreed to take one of those, what do they call it, one picture every 6 months for 5 years offers, $1 each. The salesman wasn't so insistent the first time.
But after that?
Next time, he explained to me they were in business to make a profit. And it was hardly worth their making the trip out to my house for only $1. It made me feel like, well, like about 2 cents.
Yeah, and so you order a lot of pictures.
$30 worth. I certainly can't keep that up every 6 months.
Oh, it's just another one of those chiseling little rackets.
Of course. For $30, I could have a real good picture of my baby. And what I got was 6 pictures, all dark and funny looking. Why, you can hardly recognize my little Otto.
Oh, gee, Mrs. Clance, that's a shame. It's a dirty gyp, that's what it is.
That reminds me, Mr. Sellers. I came in here to see you about...
Mrs. Clance, before you say another word, let me tell you something. Nobody that had pictures made at that fancy dress party is going to get gypped. I can assure you of that. We ought to have those pictures in for sure in another couple of weeks. I guess my trouble is I'm naturally kind of an easygoing guy. I don't like to think the worst of folks. If I'd only taken a warning from what Mrs. Clance was hinting at, I might have got mad and got the whole thing settled that very day without losing any of my friends and customers. And by the time another month was gone and still no pictures delivered, I was beginning to wonder what could be happening lately to some of my regular customers. Didn't seem to be dropping in as regular as they used to. And then one evening, some of the guys started taking some sly little pot shots for my benefit. Here's your coffee, Harry.
Bill, say, Harry, got a load of that new tie Ralph's wearing.
Yeah, Bill, pretty fancy number, isn't it? You know, hand-painted ties like that come high.
Oh, what's Ralph care about the high price of ties? He's got so many little sidelines bringing in the dough. What's he care?
Sure, Bill, nice quiet little restaurant, a nice little cut in the picture business, maybe.
How about that, Ralph? How is the picture business lately?
Oh, now, listen.
Oh,
fellas,
I can tell you about the picture business, Bill.
Huh?
Some of the places in town are raking in the suckers hand over fist. Ever hear about that mystery tune that studio plays on the radio?
That outfit that calls itself the Grand Studio? Listen, my sister...
Yeah? Your sister, too, huh? Now, we were sitting around one evening. We heard this announcement that says, the first 25 people to call a certain number and correctly identify this tune they're playing will get a free $24.50 gift and a free portrait. So my sister Annie rushes to the phone.
Hello?
This is Annie Ross. I just heard your announcement on the radio, and I know the name of the tune. It's Some Enchanted Evening.
That's correct. What did you say your name was?
Ross, Annie Ross. Am I one of the first 25 people to call? Did I win a prize?
You certainly did, miss. Would you care to call for it at our studio tomorrow? You get a free portrait, too.
Oh, yes, I'd love to come in tomorrow. What time?
About 11 will do. Ask for Miss Claire.
Oh, I'm one of the lucky winners.
So, next day, Annie traipses down to the Grand Studios and goes up to the receptionist and says...
I'm Annie Ross. I won one of your $24.50 prizes and a free portrait on the radio show last night. I'm to ask for Miss Claire.
Have a chair, miss. She'll be right with you.
Thank you.
So Annie waits there 15 minutes or more, and finally a gal comes along and says...
Miss Ross?
Oh, I'm Miss Ross.
Follow me, please.
And so Annie tags along, past a long row of little tiny cubicles about 5x5. And finally they go into one. Then the gal shuts the door and says...
Your name, please.
Ross. Annie Ross.
Age?
21.
Your occupation?
Oh, I'm a student nurse.
I see. No income. Here's your gift, miss. Goodbye.
Oh, thank you. Well, let's see what's inside. Why, only a little card way down there in the bottom. But what about my free portrait, Miss Claire?
That's your gift in the box, miss. Thank you for coming in.
But this is nothing but a card.
You can read what it says later, Miss Ross.
But don't I get my free portrait
you
now?
You have your gift, miss. Now, good morning. We're awfully busy today.
And so when she gets out into the waiting room again, Annie reads what's printed on the card.
5-year portrait pass entitles you to 1 8x10 Silvertone portrait, absolutely free, without any further obligation. Every 6 months for the next 5 years, total of 10 portraits. 10 pictures? But why didn't she let me get my first one now? Oh, let's see what's printed on the other side. Bearer, blank, address, blank. Date issued, July 1952. July 1952? Why, that's not till next summer.
Poor Annie. They wouldn't have a thing to do with her when they found out she didn't have any income of her own. The joint will probably be out of business by July.
Yeah, maybe she was lucky at that, Harry. My sister did. And boy, did she get took. Told her she was the sweetheart type. They wanted to make a big oil-color picture of her so they could display it in their window. As sweetheart of the month, or some crumb excuse.
Yeah?
And they talked her into having about $25 worth of pictures made so she'd get this big one free. Fancy, eh?
Plenty. Did she give them the right answer to the mystery tune?
No. They hooked her in a theater lobby. You know, took her name and address. Then in a few days, she gets a postcard in the mail.
And the card says she gets a free picture.
No. It says call some Webster number at her earliest convenience. Sounds urgent, so she calls up. And they tell her she's won a $25 prize. And will she come down to the studio and pick it up?
Oh, I get it. Same come on, different twist.
That's it. And the prize turns out to be one of those same 5-year passes like the one your sister Annie got. All done up in a fancy red and gold box. Only my sister's got a job, so they turn on this picture of the month free oil painting deal. And she bit.
So they got themselves a nice little hunk out of her paycheck,
they
huh?
They sure did.
Pictures any good?
Lousy.
Well, at least when she orders pictures, she did get some pictures, and that's more than a lot of folks around this neighborhood can say. What do you think, Ralph?
Oh, don't you guys know I'd never pull a trick like that on my friends?
You would think somebody you knew wouldn't try to play you for a sucker, wouldn't you, Harry?
Now, listen, fellas. The studio keeps promising off... Fellas, I'm not making anything off these pictures. I only took the orders and passed it on to the studio.
We paid our money to you, didn't we?
Well, yeah, you did pay your money to me, and I paid most of it to the studio when they took that order.
Most of it?
Yeah, $50, and the rest of it's waiting for the studio when they deliver the pictures.
You think they're gonna deliver him, Ralph?
I had enough of this. You guys stay right there. Now, don't go away. I'm going back to the phone right now and find out when.
We'll wait, Ralph.
What number are you calling, please?
Haymarket 10026.
I'm sorry, but that number's been disconnected.
Disconnected? There must be some mistake, operator. Give me information.
One moment, please.
Information?
Information. What's the number of the Mayfair Photo Studios on West 26th Street?
I'm sorry, sir. We have no such listing.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes, sir. No such listing. Perhaps they're no longer in business, sir.
Yeah. Thanks. No longer in business, huh? Boy, I might have known the way they kept stalling me. That's what they were building up to. Now, what do I do? Only thing I can do. Gotta give all that money back to my customers. Every penny of it. So I did refund every cent to my friends who ordered pictures from that Chislin studio through me. It cost me more than $50 out of my own pocket. Of course, it's worth a lot more than that to me to have my friends dropping in regular at the Blue Moon again as friends. I sure learned a lesson from that whole deal, and I'm not going to forget it very soon. But sometimes it makes me feel awful foolish when I realize that some guy could call me up and say,
"Hello, sucker."
Tonight's script was written by Christine Squire and was based on information secured in cooperation with the Better Business Bureau of Chicago. All characters were fictitious, and any resemblance to any person, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Arthur Peterson played Ralph. Other members of the cast were Geraldine Kay, Eloise Kummer, Jack Lester, Alma Platts, and Russ Reed. Hello, Sucker is produced by Judith Waller with direction by John Cowan. Special music was written by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Adele Scott and Jose Bethencourt. Sound by Tom Evans, engineering by Jack Jenkins. This is John Conrad speaking. Next week, Hello Sucker reveals some interesting facts about buying used cars. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Hello, Sucker. On Tuned To Yesterday from February 9th, 1952, out of WMAQ in Chicago. You're listening to an hour of true history on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now from scams to questions answered about mental hospitals in the late 1940s from the 10th Man series, released by the National Mental Health Foundation. This is their seventh episode in a series from September 23rd, 1947, called On Wings of Clay.
Who is the 10th? Man! The 10th man is the one man out of every 10 persons in your community who needs or will need psychiatric help. If he goes to the mental hospital which is supported by your community, what is done for him?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ralph Bellamy. You're listening to On Wings of Clay, a story about a pioneering profession, that of occupational therapy. Now, by this time, everybody knows that occupational therapy is an activity, mental or physical, prescribed by a physician for its healing value. We first heard of it during World War I, and it's now proven itself a valuable tool of medicine. That's what the textbooks say. But let's not overlook another fascinating aspect of this profession, the human side. The best way to tell you about that is with a story. So we'll begin.
Good morning, Mr. Wells.
Oh, hello there, Miss Brandon. Say, can I help you with those cans?
Oh, would you please? They're pretty heavy.
Boy, I'll say they are. Where do you want them?
Let's put them over there on that big table in the day room.
Okay. There. Well, what is the occupational therapy department up its sleeve today?
You'll find out. Oh, this is the first time I've set up shop in this ward, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is. But we've sent patients from here down to your class, and we get books from the library. Not that many of these patients have much of an interest in reading.
Well, that's why Dr. Lewis wants to try some occupational therapy with those very depressed patients, especially those who can't be moved off the ward.
Well, we have them here, all right. Look at them, all sitting around with their heads in their hands, not interested in anything.
We'll try to get them interested in clay modeling.
Say, I've always wanted to try that myself.
Maybe I can use you for bait.
Bait?
Mm-hmm. When the patients see that you're enjoying yourself, they'll want to join you. Sit down.
Hey, sounds like fun. But you'd better not let the supervisor catch me. Well, we're doing all right, Miss Brandon. There are 9 patients at that table out there in the day room, and they're all busier than bees.
Good. Of course, they're just playing with the clay, but we'll try to get them interested in something constructive soon.
Well, it's going to be pretty difficult with some of them. Mr. Fuller, for example.
Fuller?
Yeah.
Who's he?
Look out there in the day room. You see that fellow with his chair turned toward the wall?
Oh, yes.
And all he does is sit like that, chair turned into the corner, hands folded in his lap, head down, carrying all the woes of the world on his shoulders.
I wonder, Mr. Wells, suppose we took a piece of clay and just put it in his hands.
I don't think he'd even notice it.
Well, let's try it. What can we lose? Here's a lump of clay, Mr. Fuller. I'll just put it in your hands. Now let's leave him alone for a few minutes and see what he does about it.
Just as long as he doesn't think it's taffy and eat it.
Look, he's handling it. He's rolling it into a ball.
That's a funny one. Wonder what he'll do with it.
Hard to say. He'll probably keep rolling it between his hands that way. That's about as much as we can expect for now, but it's a start.
Well, Miss Brandon, the clay modelers are ready and waiting for you today. They remembered, all right.
Fine. Now, today, instead of putting the clay into Mr. Fuller's hands, let's put it on that little table, the one to his left. Let's see if he's interested enough to turn around and reach for it.
Okay, I'll try it.
Now, let's see.
No, he wants it right in his hands. Looks like that fellow wants service.
He sees it. Look, he's turning his chair around, reaching for the clay.
He's interested, all right.
Sam Fuller's chair stayed turned around. He now sat facing the ward, one step toward getting him interested in facing the world again. It was only a matter of days before he'd joined the other patients at the big table in the day room. But most important of all, Sam Fuller was talking.
Miss?
Oh, yes, Mr. Fuller?
More clay, please?
Why, of course. Here, help yourself.
Thanks.
Did you see Mr. Watkins, Scotty? Oh, it's really a first-rate job. Would you like to try one?
No, I think I'll just make these. It's all right, isn't it?
Crosses? Oh, yes, of course it's all right. They're very well-made crosses.
Say, has that Fuller guy got some kind of religious mania?
You mean because he makes all those crosses?
Yeah. Have you told Dr. Lewis about it?
Yes, in my report. He was quite interested. He said the cross was a symbol of suffering, and Mr. Fuller meant those crosses to symbolize his suffering.
Oh?
Yes. Dr. Lewis thinks it may help Mr. Fuller if he can express some of his feelings in clay. It's better than keeping everything pent up inside of him.
Well, Dr. Lewis said yesterday he was going to find some time to give him some psychiatric interviews now that he started to talk again.
Oh, it's such a thrill when a patient begins to improve with occupational therapy. And yet there are hundreds in this hospital like Mr. Fuller whom we can't reach because we don't have enough occupational therapists to go around.
Well, there must be more to this artsy-craftsy stuff than meets the eye.
here on in, Sam Fuller's progress was slow but steady. He gave up the crosses one day and started making pots and vases. In fact, he seemed so interested that Miss Brandon recommended him for the ceramics group, where he learned about glazing and firing. And several months later...
You know, Mr. Fuller, if you hadn't warmed up to working with clay, I was going to suggest that you join my rug-making class.
Oh, the rug-making stuff's all right, but this is for me.
Well, I'm glad you like it so much. Have you thought of keeping on with it after you leave here?
After I leave here? No, I haven't been thinking much about that.
Well, you've been transferred to a convalescent ward. It won't be long now. So you ought to give some thought to the future.
My future?
Why, yes, you have one, you know. It's getting brighter all the time. Remember when you first started working with clay?
Mm-hmm. I made crosses. I know why I did that now.
Before that, you were content to roll the clay into balls. But now... Where is your latest project, by the way?
Right here. I've got a wet cloth on it. There's still some finishing touches needed before it goes into the kiln. There she is. My eagle.
It's very good. Rather odd pose for an eagle, though, isn't it? Sitting on a perch with its wings folded and head down. Oh, but it's very well done. I like it. When are you going to finish it?
Oh, one of these days. One of these days.
Say, Miss Brandon, I hear one of your prized pupils has graduated.
Oh, yes, Mr. Fuller.
Funny he didn't say goodbye to you. You had a lot to do with his getting well.
Oh, that's all right. The main thing is that he has gotten well.
Yeah, it's nice to see him recover enough to go home.
Funny.
What's that, Miss Brandon?
I was in the ceramic shop this morning. His eagle was still there. I guess he didn't want to take it with him.
Oh, you know how it is. A relative comes and signs a paper and off they go. They forget.
But he was so interested in making things with clay. Oh, well, I hope he makes out all right. Come in. Why, hello, Mr. Fuller.
You're allowed to receive ex-patients as visitors in your office, Miss Brandon?
Of course. How nice of you to come back. Let me see, how long has it been?
More than 6 months. How's the clay shop?
Doing very well, thank you. But how are you doing?
Oh, fine. I'm working now. I've got a good job.
That's wonderful. Where?
In a pottery factory near my hometown.
So you're making pottery. Well, we're very pleased to have been able to help you find a new career. I was a little worried, I must admit, when you went away and left that eagle unfinished. I thought that perhaps
That reminds me. I have a present for you.
Oh, how nice. What is it?
There. Made this at home.
Why, it's an eagle. A perfect little statue of an eagle. But it's so different from that other one.
Oh, the one I left behind? Yeah, he was a pretty sad article.
That one had its wings folded and its head down. And this one has so much life, his wings outstretched, and he seems to be flying straight into the sun.
Well, that's the way I tried to make him. Full of life and free.
Like you feel now, Mr. Fuller?
I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's right. I guess the eagle's me, Miss Brandon. The new Sam Fuller.
I'm glad, Mr. Fuller.
Oh, but I guess I'm just one more case history to you, Miss Brandon. You see things like this happening often.
They could happen much more often than they do. There are hundreds here waiting for us to put the clay and tools into their hands. They've been waiting a long time.
Can't you help them as you did me?
No. There are too many of them and too few of us. Those hands are still empty.
Like Sam Fuller, many patients have found a new and worthwhile life's work through occupational therapy. And many patients, not only mental ones, have been grateful for the helping hand extended to them through this kind of rehabilitation. Many a doctor has been grateful for this method of treatment, which enables him to build self-confidence in his patients. The need for more occupational therapy in our hospitals is great. The demand for trained workers in this field is far greater than the present supply. What is the occupational therapy situation like in your hospitals? It's your duty and your right to know.
You have just heard Ralph Bellamy as narrator in On Wings of Clay, produced by the National Mental Health Foundation and presented through the cooperation of other organizations dedicated to conserving mental health.
The Tenth Man, on Tuned To Yesterday from the National Mental Health Foundation, broadcast on September 23, 1947, featuring well-known actors at the time, Ralph Bellamy, and announcer Jackson Beck. Next, our final broadcast in this hour of true history on Tuned To Yesterday, it's master storyteller John Nesbitt with his program, The Passing Parade. Armed with a team of about 14 researchers, he was able to bring stories to life of the strange and unusual, but all true. Up next, a seemingly little-known story of Franz Anton Mesmer. It's The Passing Parade.
How do you do, everyone? This is John Nesbitt for another chapter in this year's edition of The Passing Parade. And about the man who will walk in our procession today, two opposite stories could be told, both of them true. For the same man in this case was both a fraud and a sincere genius. And that is the clue to this review of our Passing Parade. Watching the review move by again, concerning the man who comes out of oblivion to live with us a few minutes today, first I could relate the history of a phony miracle man who murdered dozens of people who entrusted themselves to his care, he himself admitting that he had killed them. He burst upon the world suddenly like a thunderbolt, and he left it suddenly like a comet. His name was Franz Anton Mesmer. Mesmer. We take our modern word to mesmerize, meaning to hypnotize, from his name. In March of 1815, this man died, and we do not know whether Mesmer was his real name or not. We do not know where he was born nor when. He carefully hid all traces of his past and burned the records. Studying science, he took his first degree at the age of 14. He was a mental prodigy. By the time he was 20, he had graduated from four universities, and he knew all there was to be learned from teachers about the human body. There are hundreds of pictures of him in the museums now, and they show a man who was undoubtedly one of the handsomest fellows of his age. 6 feet 2 inches in height, wide shoulders, a high white forehead with brown hair sweeping back, very good teeth, a strong chin, and magnificent brown eyes. What Dr. Mesmer did at first when he came to Paris, no one seems to have reported. But suddenly the fame of this man blazed out like a sun over all of Europe. Old Benjamin Franklin from the United States, who was then in Paris trying to borrow money to help us beat the English in our revolution, wrote home to Philadelphia as follows. The Queen said she had discovered an amazing doctor who refused to give her a treatment without being paid a sum equivalent to £1,000. This delighted the Queen, who has invited him to court for his impudence. It seems he uses some form of electricity in his cures. And although I believed him a scoundrel, I tried some myself, and bless me, I feel much better. So I am forming an official committee to investigate the methods of this strange and perhaps wonderful man. He is known by a single word, Mesmer. So wrote our Benjamin Franklin. Now come on a visit to this strange and perhaps wonderful Mesmer. It is 2 o'clock in the afternoon of any day when he is holding a public consultation at his offices. He now owns an entire building, a small palace at the edge of Paris, and the road in front of it is jam-packed with carriages of the noblemen, and also wooden carts filled with straw belonging to poor peasants. Mesmer's offices are a kind of shrine, and from half of Europe the little wooden carts are coming in with the sick. He charges fantastic prices to the rich. He treats the poor for nothing. At 1 minute before 2, a pair of huge white carved doors open, and you are given 60 seconds to move inside to the vast chamber where Mesmer himself will shortly appear. dukes and duchesses, counts and countesses, princes, peasants, beggars, blind children, lame women, dying old folk on stretchers. The entire crowd rushes forward through the wide doors, and the moment they are in, the doors are slammed tight and bolted behind them. We are now in an enormous hall, perhaps 70 feet long and 40 feet wide. The floor is black marble. The walls are draped in black velvet. And there are tables around, covered with oddly shaped glass containers, with wires leading from jars like wet cell batteries. 50 or 60 little white chairs are scattered around for the patients, and that is all. Through the crowd moves a group of silent young men. They are the apprentices of Mesmer, the neophytes. At 2:03, a bell rings. It rings softly 3 times. Now 2 men in black silk reach for a curtain. They draw it aside. And this is the clue for the master himself, who is about to make his dramatic entrance, the wonder worker of Europe, Franz Anton Mesmer. This is John Nesbitt on the reviewing stand again, and we can watch Dr. Mesmer at work. He wears a purple robe that falls clear to his heels. Under this, he wears a white satin court suit that blazes with diamonds and pearls. Over his head, he wears a long white wig, like that of a Lord High Chancellor in an English courtroom. Yes, it's a phony costume. It's vaudeville. It is like the entrance of an amateur magician in a neighborhood magical show. Yes, indeed. Then Mesmer begins to walk around the room. He stops only a moment beside each patient, touching their hands gently, smiling into their eyes, and perhaps running a bar of magnetized glass around their heads. And he does all this with such dignity and composure that newcomers stop grinning and they grow a little frightened. Mesmer moves rapidly around the room, on with his conjuring, giving an electric shock here, waving his glass wand around there, but now and then just prescribing plain, safe medicine. For he is no fool, and he never stops being a doctor. He comes near the end of his tour, around the hall, to where a blind girl from Flanders is waiting. An intelligent young woman of 19, come hundreds of miles with her father to see if the wonder worker Mesmer can diagnose the disease that has sealed her eyes. Well, he did restore, through placing her in hypnotic trances, the sight of the blind girl from Flanders. His pupils learned his methods, and they went out and founded Mesmer clinics everywhere in Europe. There were such institutions in New York and Boston for a time. Finally, there were 500 Mesmer clinics in the world, all rigged out in fancy black trappings and all, incidentally, paying a nice fat royalty to Dr. Mesmer for the use of his name. And then, suddenly as he had appeared, Mesmer was gone. The Mesmer clinics were closed, for the French Revolution erupted like a volcano and men's thoughts were swept from healing to revenge and death. Well, nearly 15 years after Mesmer disappeared, a medical student from Scotland set out to try and find the place of his death. He was unable to find the place of Mesmer's death because Mesmer wasn't dead. He was alive and well. At Basel, Switzerland, that medical student heard that an old country doctor named Mesmer was working in treating the minor ailments of farmers and villagers and was always willing to help with the birth of a calf or a pig, country doctor or vet. And it was Franz Anton Mesmer, old now, tall and impressive as ever, calm and composed as he had been when he had stood at silken bedsides and gazed into the eyes of Europe's lost nobility. He received that student in a tiny cabin, and then, with all of his old skill at reading minds, he calmly told the student what he'd come to find out. He said quietly, "How do you wish to learn whether I was a scientist or a charlatan?" "Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Many I did cure, but many I must have killed. I think about them all here, as if their ghosts came to visit me by this fire. There was a child, for example, whose leg was poisoned, and I thought that magnetism was a cure then. I ordered it, and he died, and I killed him. And that famous case of the blind girl from Flanders, she was among the first whom I mesmerized without the use of electricity. But after I left, I wrote, and her blindness returned. My cure meant nothing." And the old man finished with these words, "There is a hidden power, yes, but I only caught a glimpse of it. The gate was locked, and I had no key. But I know this, that faith can heal, and faith can kill. That is all. It must be understood. Where old Mesmer the charlatan blundered, their scientists may one day march. Well, these words were his valedictory. He died 3 years later, and over the grave in the cemetery at Basel, Switzerland, on his tombstone, was placed a curious jingle of four lines. They are there today. Who ordered this to be printed there? That is unknown. But beneath that stone lies the dust of one who astonished the world. All of this rising up from the dream of that man whose tombstone is now half hidden by the weeds and on which is carved, he lived in glory, he died in shame, forgotten his story, defiled his name. Franz Anton Mesmer, 1815. Our footnote for today permits me to add to the Mesmer story this fact, that the material I used came from a little book, and this little book was written by that medical student who was the last man to talk with Franz Anton Mesmer, that is, the last medical man. Now, that book which he wrote had quite a lot of adventures. For 37 years after the book was printed, it was discovered in an old bookshop by a great French mental specialist. His name was Charcot, and he decided after reading it that perhaps Franz Anton Mesmer was not such a charlatan as had been thought. And this doctor in Paris repeated some of the experiments. Many were astounding successes and produced real cures. There began modern psychiatry. And a pupil of Charcot was named Sigmund Freud, which brings us down to the legitimate mental workers of today. This is John Nesbitt bidding a goodbye till we meet again.
The Passing Parade, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from the early 1950s, wrapping up this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.